Another winter of fighting adds to suffering in Gaza.
Winter is arriving as Gaza's humanitarian crisis is getting worse. The medical system is barely functioning.
President-elect Donald Trump threatens to reassert U.S. control over the Panama Canal.
I'm not going to stand for it. So to the officials of Panama, please be guided accordingly.
And a very hot endeavor as a NASA spacecraft is about to make the closest approach ever to the sun. Today is Monday, December 23rd. And this is VOA's International Edition. Hi there, I'm Lori London. At least 23 Palestinians were killed by Israeli airstrikes across the Gaza Strip on Sunday. Two children were among five killed in a strike that hit a shelter for displaced people in a humanitarian-designated area of Khan Yunis. The Israeli military said it had targeted Hamas militants operating within those areas. As Israel's 14-month-old war with Hamas drags on and talks continue for a hostage release and ceasefire in Gaza, the arriving winter means life will get even harder for the 2 million Palestinians living in the territory. Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem has this report.
Like many other Palestinians in Gaza, the Abu Maryam family live in a tent in Al-Muassi, an Israeli-designated safe zone in southern Gaza. Etimad, her husband Arif, and their two grown children fled their home in northern Gaza and have been displaced five times since the beginning of the war between Israel and Hamas last year. They worry about surviving the winter.
The idea that winter is coming and there will be rain is a scary and bleak idea. Because we live in tents of fabric, it cannot bear the rain.
Etimad says it is impossible to maintain basic hygienic standards living in a tent.
There is no cleanliness. All day I try to organize and clean, and yet I feel like I haven't done anything. Insects and mice are widespread here. They gnaw at clothes, bedding, and bags of legumes.
Etimad's husband Arif says rain used to be seen as a blessing for Gazans, especially those working in agriculture. But now, he says, it's a curse.
In the old days, we prayed for rain. It was something we thank God for. But now we pray for no rain because we are living under a piece of plastic. Everything is turned against us. Even agricultural land, which was for farming, is now the place where we set our tents.
Winter is arriving as Gaza's humanitarian crisis is getting worse. The medical system is barely functioning, and UNRWA, the lead UN agency working with the Palestinians, says there is simply not enough food for the population of more than 2 million Palestinians, especially in northern Gaza. Philippe Lazzarini is the Commissioner General of UNRWA.
So there is a real risk today that we again entering into the winter. The immunity system of the people, it's much more weakened, that we enter a situation where famine or acute malnutrition is unfortunately again a likelihood. And again, this can be avoided.
Israel recently severed ties with UNRWA, saying some of its employees took part in the October 7th attack on Israel, a claim UNRWA denies. The Israel Defense Forces, or IDF, says it allows enough international aid into Gaza through its checkpoints and that the problem is one of distribution inside Gaza.
Today we have more than 800 trucks that waiting for the international community to deliver it from here to the people, inside Gaza.
As the Abu Maryam family sees things, it doesn't really matter who is responsible for the lack of aid. They are facing another cold, rainy winter in a tent, not knowing when they will be able to move back home. Linda Gradstein, VOA News.
Health officials in Gaza on Sunday reported the Palestinian death toll has now climbed above 45,000. As regional and world leaders express hope for a new era in Syria, Turkey's Foreign Minister Hakan Fidan met with Syria's de facto leader, Ahmed al-Sharaa, also known as Abu Mohammed al-Jolani, in Damascus on Sunday. Emma Yela with Reuters reports.
Sharaa is the leader of the Islamist group Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS, which led the operation to topple Bashar al-Assad 2 weeks ago. Footage shared by Turkey's foreign ministry showed the two men embrace and pose for photographs. On Friday, Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan said that Turkey would help Syria's new administration form a state structure and draft a new constitution, adding Fidan would head to Damascus to discuss this new structure without providing a date. Ankara had for years backed rebels looking to oust Assad and welcomed the end of his family's brutal five-decade rule after a 13-year civil war. Turkey also hosts millions of Syrian migrants it hopes will start returning home after Assad's fall, and has vowed to help rebuild Syria. Fidan's visit comes amid fighting in northeast Syria between Turkey-backed Syrian fighters and the Kurdish YPG militia, which spearheads the U.S.-allied Syrian Democratic Forces, or SDF, that Ankara regards as a terrorist organization. Speaking alongside Sharaa after the talks, Fidan said, quote, "There is no place for Kurdish militias in Syria." Turkey, alongside Syrian allies, has mounted several cross-border offensives against the Kurdish faction in northern Syria and controls swaths of territory along the border. Ankara has repeatedly demanded Washington halt support for the Kurdish fighters. The SDF has been on the back foot since Assad's fall, as it looks to preserve political gains made in the last 13 years, now that Syria's new rulers are friendly to Ankara. Sharaa said his administration would soon announce the new structure of the defense ministry and military, and would not allow for arms outside the control of the state. Seeking to allay worries about the future of Syria, Sharaa has hosted numerous foreign visitors in recent days and has vowed to prioritize rebuilding the country.
That was Reuters correspondent Emma Yela. Russian President Vladimir Putin held talks in the Kremlin on Sunday with Slovakia's Prime Minister Robert Fico, a rare visit to Moscow by an EU leader since the conflict between Russia and Ukraine began in 2022. And at his annual press conference on Thursday in Moscow, Putin said Russian forces are gradually achieving its so-called main objectives in Ukraine, and he's ready to hold talks with U.S. President-elect Donald Trump. Separately, allies in Europe are debating what Trump's win in the U.S. presidential election could mean for their security and economy. Trump's first term in office was characterized by often turbulent relations with EU and NATO partners. As Henry Ridgewell reports, Russia's invasion of Ukraine has amplified Europe's concerns over the transatlantic alliance.
There are jitters over the commitment of incoming U.S. President Donald Trump to Europe's security. In 2017, Trump labeled NATO as obsolete and repeatedly criticized NATO allies.
23 of the 28 member nations are still not paying what they should be paying and what they are supposed to be paying for their defense. This is not fair to the people and taxpayers of the United States.
At the 2018 NATO summit, allies said Trump threatened to pull the United States out of the alliance if European nations failed to increase military spending. Trump claimed success.
Everyone's agreed to substantially up their commitment. They're going to up it at levels that they've never thought of before.
Trump caused further NATO shockwaves in February this year on the campaign trail.
One of the presidents of a big country stood up and said, "Well, sir, if we don't pay and we're attacked by Russia, will you protect us?" I said, "You didn't pay? You're delinquent?" He said, "Yes, let's say that happened. No, I would not protect you. In fact, I would encourage them to do whatever the hell they want. You got to pay. You got to pay your bills."
NATO allies can expect renewed pressure to spend more when Trump takes office, says Fabrice Potier, a former NATO head of policy planning.
I'm not so sure We can talk about an existential threat to NATO like back in 2018, but you can count on him to drive a very hard bargain, an extra emphasis on not just having reached more or less the 2% target, but possibly laying the ground for 2.5 or 3% at the next summit in June in The Hague.
Such an approach would likely be welcomed by many European states following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Again, Fabrice Potier.
The Eastern Front allies like Poland, for example, but also the Baltic and even the Nordic countries are now actually seeing that as a good thing. But I think there's still some worry across the alliance that his transactionalism could undermine the credibility of the collective defense.
Donald Trump on Wednesday appointed loyalist Matthew Whitaker as his nominee for U.S. ambassador to NATO. In a written statement, Trump said Whitaker will strengthen relationships with our NATO allies and that he would put America first. His appointment still has to be approved by the U.S. Senate. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
The United States last month formally opened a permanent military base in Poland, part of NATO's missile defense system amid rising tensions with Russia. The Polish defense minister says the base is also a testament to Polish-American cooperation. VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Mirosława Gongadze reports.
A new U.S. military base in northern Poland is becoming a key part of NATO's missile defense system known as Aegis Ashore. Located in Radzykowo near the Baltic Sea and close to Russia's Kaliningrad region, the base is equipped with three launchers, each capable of holding eight interceptor missiles. It is designed to shield the NATO alliance and Europe from ballistic missile threats. Captain Michael Dwan, commander of the U.S. Navy's Task Force 64, which focuses on missile defense system missions, explained that the launchers operate autonomously, requiring no manual intervention.
Once a threat is detected, our system automates that response by choosing one of the available missiles in any one of our three launchers to meet that threat.
The base, along with a similar installation in Romania, U.S. Navy destroyers stationed in the Spanish port of Rota, and an early warning radar in Turkey, forms a vital part of NATO's Aegis Ashore missile defense shield over Europe, designed to counter medium and intermediate range ballistic missile threats. The system recently demonstrated its effectiveness in defending Israel, said Aegis Ashore Poland commanding officer Matthew Plant.
The Aegis system and SPY in the ballistic missile defense mission was tested in the Mediterranean Sea for in defense of Israel. So those systems were tested and proven. It was an Iranian launch against Israel, yes.
In this command and control room, U.S. military personnel monitor around the clock for any potential threats. Their mission is to detect and respond to missile attacks using radar data to guide interceptors in neutralizing incoming missiles. Officials here emphasize that the base is strictly defensive. U.S. Navy Captain Michael Dwan.
There's no explosives or warheads that are on any of our missiles here in that site.
The Kremlin responded to the opening of the U.S. base in Radzykowo, saying that Russia would adopt appropriate measures to ensure parity. For Poland, a key NATO member bordering Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine, the base is a vital part of its defense strategy. Polish Defense Minister Władysław Kosiniak-Kamysz calls the base a milestone in deterrence and defense.
The Radzykowo base cannot be packed in a suitcase and evacuated within a couple of hours. This protects Europe, but also the US and Canada, all the NATO allies. It's one of the key projects, and you can see how much it's being opposed by Russia. It shows what an important project this is.
The base is managed under NATO's Allied Air Command at Ramstein Air Base in Germany, which oversees the command and control of the bloc's ballistic missile defense system. Mirosława Gongadze, VOA News, Radzykowo, Poland.
Hear are some of the other stories we are following from around the world. Police say the man suspected of plowing a car through crowds at a German Christmas market in an attack that killed 5 people and injured dozens more faces multiple charges of murder and attempted murder. Friday evening's attack in the city of Magdeburg shocked the country and stirred up tensions over the charged issue of immigration. China on Sunday criticized new U.S. military aid to Taiwan, saying the package seriously violates the One China principle and provisions of joint communiques between China and the U.S. A statement released by China's foreign ministry called Taiwan, quote, a red line that must not be crossed in China-U.S. relations. Stampedes during 3 Christmas charity events across Nigeria have left at least 67 people dead in the past week, many of them children. Many of the victims collapsed during a crowd surge as people grew desperate for food items. Families are struggling during the country's worst cost of living crisis in a generation. President-elect Donald Trump has threatened to reassert U.S. control over the Panama Canal, accusing Panama of charging excessive rates to use the Central American Passage, which allows ships to cross between the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans.
They haven't treated us fairly. If the principles, both moral and legal, of this magnanimous gesture of giving are not followed, then we will demand that the Panama Canal be returned to the United States of America in full, quickly, and without question. I'm not going to stand for it. So to the officials of Panama, please be guided accordingly.
Speaking to a crowd of supporters in Arizona on Sunday, Trump also said he would not let the canal fall into the, quote, wrong hands, warning of potential Chinese influence on the passage. In a recorded statement on social media, Panamanian President Jose Raul Mulino reaffirmed the country's sovereignty over the canal and said China had no influence on the canal's administration, adding that Panama's sovereignty and independence are non-negotiable. Migration flows from Latin America to the United States slowed in 2024, partly because of new policies and controls implemented in the so-called transit countries that migrants pass through on their way north. The measures and the promises of mass deportations from the incoming U.S. presidential administration are reshaping migration dynamics. Veronica Villafane reports.
Willing to risk everything for the hope of a better life in the United States, like Angel Rivero, who left his native Colombia.
I've been traveling since September and I still haven't reached Mexico.
Rivero, who is in Guatemala with his wife and daughter, says he has faced discrimination and distrust during his journey, but remains determined to reach his destination.
People discriminate against us a lot because they think we are lazy, but no, we are hardworking people looking for jobs.
Guatemala, a key transit country for migrants heading north, implemented stricter border controls in 2021 and is expelling those who enter the country illegally. Francisco Pelizari is a Catholic priest and the director of Casa del Migrante Guatemala, an organization that helps migrants and others.
The numbers in our shelters have dropped by 10 to 15% compared to last year.
But he also says that 75% of the migrants passing through Guatemala are Venezuelans, and that he's seeing an increasing number of families and minors. While Guatemala serves as a transit country for many migrants, a significant number of its own nationals also attempt to reach the United States, often unsuccessfully. In 2024, over 70,000 Guatemalans were deported from the United States and Mexico, according to Guatemala's Institute of Migration. The flow of irregular migrants has also significantly slowed in Colombia, a major destination for Venezuelan migrants, says Johan Wachter, government secretary of Necoclí, a coastal town near the Panamanian border and a starting point for thousands crossing the treacherous Darién Gap.
One of the key factors influencing this reduction in migration dynamics is political circumstances, particularly the elections in Venezuela, Panama, and now in the United States.
Wachter says that as of November 30, 2024, the number of irregular migrants crossing the Darién Gap fell from nearly 506,000 in 2023 to just over 206,000 this year. One contributing factor could be measures taken by Panama's newly elected president fulfilling his campaign having promised to curb illegal migration, Mulino signed an agreement with the U.S. in July to repatriate migrants. Deportation flights began in August. Neighboring Colombia is also trying to make the migration process more orderly. Charlotte Slente is Secretary General of the Danish Refugee Council.
Colombia, in fact, is one of the countries demonstrating a willingness to contribute to the global solution to this refugee crisis and forced displacement.
Colombia has introduced the V-Special Visitor Visa to regularize Venezuelans who entered the country illegally before December 4, 2024. The Venezuelan migrant crisis, triggered by political and economic turmoil, has become one of the largest displacement crises in the world, with nearly 8 million people fleeing over the past decade. As transit countries like Colombia and Guatemala adapt to shifting migration dynamics, they face growing humanitarian needs and political pressures in an increasingly complex regional context. And U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's promise to conduct mass deportations is also complicating their journey for migrants and the countries they come from and pass through. Veronica Villafañe, VOA News.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. Some of Johannesburg's informal waste reclaimers got an upgrade recently, a collaboration turning a sprawling camp into an award-winning data-driven solar-powered sorting and baling hub. As Maurice de Klerk reports, incomes are up and the neighbors are happier.
I come recycling because my job was finished.
Before the hub went live in April, the reclaimers lived and sorted at an informal open-air camp near the Hollard Insurance headquarters. The socially and sustainably conscious insurer contracted Urban Surfer, an informal recycling consultancy, to formalize and manage the camp as a pilot project with the permission of the reclaimers and other neighbors. Kyle McWilliam is head of group shared services at Hollard Insurance.
I'm supplying water to the reclaimers, I'm supplying seeds to plants. Now, with it being completely enclosed, with them having sleeping quarters and the relevant equipment, it actually contributes really nicely into the neighborhood.
Residents also have access to Wi-Fi and solar power, and they've even started a garden. The camp doubles as a sorting, processing, and storage facility. The reclaimers are issued trolleys and personal protective equipment. Urban Surfer assists with training and collects data on the little-studied world of informal waste reclaimers. Since the project's start, the reclaimers baled and sold more than 70 tons of recyclable litter for combined earnings of about $12,500, almost tripling their individual average incomes.
I can send my family money. I can buy me clothes, I can buy me food.
Safisu Gumbi is a director at Urban Surfer.
The guys are more presentable, so they are collecting in areas with large volumes of waste, like shopping centers, business parks, you know, offices. And now they're not only just collecting and selling, but they are collecting and baling their waste.
Reclaiming and selling waste to survive is common amongst the extremely poor and marginalized, especially in the developing world. Research shows South Africa's estimated 200,000 informal recyclers divert most of the recyclables from the country's nearly full landfill sites, saving municipalities millions annually. Informal waste management systems researcher Trevor van Wyk says the initiative assists in destigmatizing waste work.
They are essential to maintaining our infrastructure in South Africa.
In the meantime, more lucrative waste management service contracts for the Urban Surfer waste professionals and plans for more hubs could come soon. Marisa de Klerk, VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
And finally today, a NASA spacecraft is about to make the closest approach to the sun. The Parker Solar Probe was launched in 2018 to get a close-up look at the sun. And on Tuesday, Parker will pass within a record-breaking 3.8 million miles of the sun's surface. That's nearly seven times closer to the sun than previous spacecraft. Scientists say they won't hear from Parker until a few days after the flyby. It'll continue circling the sun at this distance until at least September. Scientists hope to better understand what drives the solar wind and why the corona is so much hotter than the sun's surface. And that'll wrap it up for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thanks so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Lori London.